It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. I'm moving a little slow this morning because last night was the Oh Yeah third anniversary party, which was fantastic. It was great to see people. It's an amazing store. A lot of people you've heard on the show were there. Elliot Serrano, John Suntress, Jimmy the Muscle, Mark Hammond. But, you know, moving a little slow today. So, give me a minute. One of the things that's important to know about me is I am addicted to action figure message boards. As you guys know, I collect more action figures than I collect comics. And if I have any moment of downtime, I am either on eBay looking to buy more stuff or going on message boards to find out what came out. And that's how I found out about Philip J. Reed. Philip has a Kickstarter now for his book Universe Expanded, which is a retrospective of the Star Wars Expanded Universe figures from 1998. Looked interesting, so I contacted Philip on Twitter to talk to him, and as I found out, this is the fifth book he's done. He's done a lot of these really gorgeous, basically coffee table presentation books on Transformers and Star Wars. So I decided to talk about it, and what followed was really an hour about Kenner and Hasbro and kind of the history of the action figure industry, which I thought was fantastic again. So let's get to it.
I would say action figures begin with the Jawa in 1978.
Was that the first Star Wars you got?
That was the very first Star Wars figure that I got. And then some unknown fuzzy time later, because I was 5 years old at the time, I got a Chewbacca from the Tooth Fairy.
That limits your amount of dramatic tension, though, Chewbacca and a Jawa.
Yes, but it's still a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, when you're five, do you really care?
No. No, not at all. I run into that with my children. I have a seven-year-old, and every time he gets into something, I feel like I have to collect everyone in the line, and then I realize he simply doesn't care.
Right.
You know, we got very excited. A few months ago, I found Nightwing and Deathstroke from Imaginext.
Okay.
Target. And I got really excited. He was like, yeah, we can get it. And then when we got home, I said, let's put them all out together and let's line them all up. And he had lost half of them. And I was like, where did they go? And he's like, I don't know. So 5-year-olds don't care.
Well, I didn't really start to figure out, oh, wait, there's a lot more until I saw the Sears Christmas catalog. I think that would have probably been 79.
Yeah. Now, you had already gone to Star Wars by this point?
Oh, yes.
So you'd seen the movie.
Oh, yeah. I remember not only seeing the movie, but first seeing commercials on TV. I remember seeing a 2020 segment on Star Wars. It was specifically on lasers. I remember that. I should look that up. That's probably on YouTube.
I think I remember that, too. Did that have Ben Burtt hitting high tension wires to get the sounds? Did
it have? I don't know. The most I remember of it was that was before I saw the movie, and I was very excited by the few clips of the movie that I saw during that 2020 segment. I mean, I was five, so I'm lucky to remember that much.
Right.
And of course, I remember watching the second half of the holiday special. I missed the first half.
Really, it's not like there was a good half.
Nah, the second half had the animation in it, which I still think is a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Did it have the B. Arthur singing part in the second half?
I think that's in the first half, yeah. But whichever half it's in, it's no good.
So you might have done okay. So when you see the Sears catalog in 79, and if I'm not mistaken, by 79, we have the full line, we have the Death Star, we have the Millennium Falcon.
Oh yeah, we've got all of that. But what I actually got out of that 79 wish book was the pack of 16 figures.
Wow, did they bundle all 16?
They did. I remember it very well because I remember being so excited. At the time, I was living in Turkey. My dad was in the Air Force, and we traveled a lot.
Really?
So I couldn't just go to the store like a bunch of kids and get toys. Mm-hmm. What happened was we placed this order, and then, I don't know, I probably aged 30 years between when we placed it and I received it.
So you just got it? Is that what you're saying?
It felt so long. When you're like 6 years old, you know it's going to take forever. Yeah, it's going to feel like forever.
And everything feels like forever when you're six.
But I didn't. It was a white box with all the figures in bags. There was no like backing card or anything like that.
Oh, really? So they were like loose in one box?
Like each one, if I remember right, each one was in a bag and they were all jammed in this little box. And at first I was so confused because I couldn't figure out, did they only send me like four figures? What was going on? I got it open eventually, figured out, oh no, they're all in here. And I didn't care that there was no packaging at that point because I had 16 Star Wars figures.
That is awesome. I don't think I've never gotten that many figures in one day without spending my own money.
I am actually pulling up on Flickr right now. Somebody has posted that 79 Wish book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I am trying to find, and I think I just found the page from the catalog. And, wow.
I feel like we've staged a reunion between you and this page and the catalog.
Oh, and here's the funny thing.
Yep.
The image is actually not what you received.
What, were they prototypes?
No, but the image of 16 figures shows the blue Snaggletooth as well as the red Snaggletooth.
Oh, so did they counted them as two separate figures?
Walrus Man is missing.
Oh.
I didn't get a blue Snaggletooth. I totally remember that.
What? That is interesting. I actually had a blue... I think I had got a 4-pack from Sears. I had a blue Snaggletooth, and then later got the red Snaggletooth on the card.
Wow. I want to send Sears a letter now and explain to them how they ruined my life when I was 6 years old in 79, because I should have had a blue Snaggletooth.
Yeah. Although Sears has bigger problems right now than what happened to their 79 catalog. If you read the financial section.
Yeah.
It's possible that, like, somewhere in Hoffman Estates, they would get that letter and go, see, this is where it went wrong. Blue Snaggletooth. Blue Snaggletooth and Amazon. It was those two.
Oh, and it's funny with the Blue Snaggletooth because I think it's about 4 years ago now. I was just about to head off to Hong Kong for a trip. I got the Sideshow 12-inch Hammerhead. And I loved it so much that I just had to post online and say, Sideshow needs to make a 12-inch Snaggletooth, a blue Snaggletooth. And they still haven't done it.
Did Gentle Giant do it? I thought the...
They did. Oh, yeah, I've got that. That's the Jumbo Vintage. That line's amazing. Right. But yeah. No, Sideshow does the highly articulated, like, modern 12-inch.
Right, yeah, basically the American Hot Toys.
Yeah. The other Gentle Giant Blue Snaggletooth piece I've got is the large Blue Snaggletooth statue they made.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's Blue Snaggletooth sitting there in a chair for the cantina design. He's got those great disco boots on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's easy to say that really Star Wars was your ground zero.
Oh, absolutely. But I was the perfect age. I mean, I was born in 72, so...
Yeah, so was I, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was May. What month were you?
June.
Okay. Yeah, we're almost exactly the same age.
But I'm younger.
And you always will be, Phil.
That is very true.
You can count on that. But I do remember that that Star Wars was like an atom bomb culturally that went off. I was getting the Mego superheroes before. I was really into like the Adam West Batman and Super Friends. But I remember when Star Wars hit, all for me, superheroes just didn't exist anymore. And they didn't come back in my life until after Jedi. So it was like Star Wars scorched the earth for any other geek interest for me.
Oh yeah, it took over my life from basically 77 through 84.
Yeah, did any other lines get in? Because I know I know once you get to the early 80s, that's when the explosion happens.
So G.I. Joe almost got my interest. I ended up getting a Breaker, which was probably the absolute worst choice I could have made as a kid in 82.
He was born.
For my first G.I. Joe, because where's his gun?
Well, he was the communications officer, and you got no one else to communicate with. So Breaker sat around waiting for a call that would never arrive.
Yep. I had a friend who ended up with some Eagle Force figures that year, so we played with those quite a bit.
Were you still outside of the U.S. at that point?
No, by that point I was back into the U.S. Got back into the U.S. in early 81.
Okay. Yeah, G.I. Joe was... I got Snake Eyes and a Cobra Soldier early, so I stuck with it pretty hard. Especially because they were in scale. That was a huge selling point.
Yeah. And those were the only two lines that really kind of snuck in between Star Wars. And I remember then in 82, spending some time with Hot Wheels. There was kind of that lull in Star Wars things. And for some reason, as a kid, I latched onto Hot Wheels and Stompers.
Hmm. That's interesting, because 82 is when G.I. Joe starts. So I think I probably picked that up. You're right, there was a lull, because Kenner was basically waiting for Jedi.
And yeah, I mean, they were still coming out with toys, but I don't know what it was. It just, something in that time frame, little toy cars called to me. But by early 83, all the Jedi buildup, I was definitely back on Star Wars.
Right, and as you said, you stayed with it till 84, so that's... that's a few lines after Jedi.
I think they were still technically Jedi classified at that time. I thought the Power of the Force line was 85.
Yeah, it's like 85. And I think 86 is when it ends, and it was still Power of the Force. That's when the coins came into the cards, because the interest had just disappeared.
Yeah. And for me, it was then Transformers took my attention.
Okay. And I saw, your first two books are very Transformers focused. Would that say that's your second passion in action figures?
I couldn't rank them.
They're like children?
Yeah, I don't have any children, so I have toys.
That's good, because I have toys and children, and there's actually a conflict of interest in the house. There's many conversations where I go, hey, whose toys are those? They're your toys, then put them back.
Oh, I thought it was, they're my toys now.
Some are. You know, it becomes a tiered system. Like, we have, at the top of the pyramid, we have Hot Toys that are on very tall shelves that no one can touch. And at the bottom tier, we have things like Imaginext or Fisher-Price that we have bought for them. And somewhere in the middle, there's lines that I've gotten out of. Like G.I. Joe, that I'm like, here, you can just add these to your playroom. And then in right dead center is things like Marvel Legends and DC Direct, where you can play with these supervised.
Okay.
And it's definitely a conflicted feeling, because it's great to watch your kids play with things you love, and then you're terrified that they're going to break them.
And yet I have no kids, and I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah, you're not so terrified that you're going to break them.
Oh, no, I'm going to break them. Don't worry about that.
But if you break them, you can blame the company. Then you can go online, like we all do, and go, they didn't make these well at all.
The arm didn't survive the drop from the second story. What's wrong with this toy?
Yes, I had to boil this toy.
But let's see. Yeah, I think Transformers was last real line that captured my attention until probably about 95, when all of a sudden Star Wars happens again.
Yeah, it's a strange time. Now, would you say, now Transformers never took the break that Star Wars did. So were you collecting Transformers the entire time, or did you get to that end of high school period where I'm out of toys until they make really cool ones again?
Basically, it's probably early to mid, late 86. Yeah, probably more like late 86, just kind of trailed off. I started playing a lot more games that started sucking down more of my attention and money and time. Mm-hmm. And the toys just, the toys kind of trailed off. I would still pick up the occasional comic and things like that. But no, it just kind of died. And then Heir to the Empire and Dark Empire hit in the early 90s. And I started reading more Star Wars stuff, started trying to dig out my old Star Wars toys. But of course, by then, most were gone. So eventually started picking up the occasional thing here and there. And then Kenner decided to make more toys for us in 95.
Yeah, it was an odd time, 95, because it's really not until 97 that we get the special editions. They just kind of existed all on their own. At the time, you know, the market was dominated by Toy Biz with the Marvel toys, and Kenner was already successfully doing Batman the Animated Series.
Yes. And by that point, Kenner was already owned by Hasbro.
Right, that was and that was a big part of the Hasbro acquisition, was that they still had Star Wars. Hasbro wanted Star Wars, so they bought the company that had them.
Well, actually, that's one of the things I covered in one of the recent marketing books, is by then, so Kenner's deal with Lucasfilm was basically, you send us $100,000 a year, you have the rights for the rest of your life, I mean, until the world ends. In 91 or 92, I'd have to look it up to the exact time, somebody, after Kenner was bought by Hasbro, said, well, we're not even making these toys, let's save $100,000, and didn't send the check. So they lost that right.
Really?
And then Galoob stepped up and was like, oh, we want to make Star Wars Micro Machine toys. And the success with the Star Wars Micro Machine toys is a lot of what led Hasbro and Kenner to start making the action figures again.
That's interesting. That their Micro Machine line was really comprehensive.
Oh, it was amazing. But that's okay, because Hasbro, in the end, just bought Galoob.
Yeah, that was that gold rush when just all the geek companies were buying geek companies. You know, when Marvel bought their own distributor and Tops and... You know, there was that midnight, right before the crash of comics, everybody was buying everybody up. And now we basically have Warner and Disney owning everything.
Almost. I still think Disney needs to step up and just buy Hasbro and get it over with.
Yeah, well, especially with both Marvel and Star Wars, they're covering.
And not even so much that as... I mean, if they had to choose between Mattel and Hasbro as Disney, I would choose Hasbro, because Hasbro has more recognizable and marketable brands than Mattel does. Yes, Barbie and Hot Wheels are big, but they don't compare to Hasbro's giant IP catalog that ranges everywhere from Transformers to G.I. Joe to Dungeons & Dragons to Magic the Gathering. I mean, there is such a giant wealth of potential money in Hasbro, just in terms of things they haven't exploited yet, that Disney is perfect to take over.
Right. And Hasbro has such a better pulse on the boys market than Mattel ever had. Mattel has always relied on Barbie, and then every now and then they would hit something out of the boys market, like He-Man, or... you know, they basically got the DC license just to compete with Hasbro for the Marvel license.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing that there's the last year or two in Mattel, they've shifted away from the classic comic characters and the older boy market. And they're really just using the Imagine X brand and a lot more of the kid-friendly and younger kid-friendly lines for DC. So I don't know what their long-term plan is. But yeah, there has been an effort for Disney to really conquer the boys market, and they've done it by buying what boys love, by buying Marvel and Lucasfilm.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in that, and that's part of why I think if I was making decisions at Disney, I would be eyeballing Hasbro a lot.
Right, so when Star Wars comes back in 95, are you in immediately? Because I personally...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I waited a little bit. They were really stylized. Remember, Luke had gigantic chest muscles.
I didn't care. There was new Star Wars action figures at Walmart when I walked in there one day, so I walked out with Star Wars action figures. I was just actually today having this exact conversation with Matt Dowdy over at O'Neill Design. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we were both remarking on was at the time, it was a $5 price point for a Star Wars action figure. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really high. And I look back now 20 years and it's, I wish I could go buy a Star Wars action figure for $5.
Yeah, I wish I could buy any figure for $5. At the time, it did feel high because we remember the original line being $3.
Yeah, and that's why, because I wasn't already buying like Kenner's alien figures or something like that at the time. So for me, the price, it was a sticker shock of a decade.
Right. Yeah, and for me, I had the same sticker shock, but I was already buying the Batman the Animated Series from Kenner and the Marvel from Toy Biz, but they were also $5 and they were bigger.
Okay.
And had more accessories. So when Star Wars came out, it was like, well, these are the same size they used to be, and they don't have. And you remember at that point, Batman would come with like a giant hang glider, and Wolverine would come with like a catapult. Like they were almost mini play sets in the blister card with them. And Star Wars was just like they were. It was the figure, you know, in a very thin blister with a gun taped to the side of the blister.
Yeah, but you were paying for muscles in that first wave.
Yeah, but then the muscles went away. And then you were paying for accuracy.
Oh, I don't know about that.
At the time, they seemed very accurate. And then when you weren't paying for accuracy, then you were paying for dynamic poses. Then you were paying for articulation. They've done a great job of basically rebooting the line 3 or 4 times over the last 20 years and getting fans in. And now with the Star Wars Black, just basically attacking the market from an entirely different angle. And now you're paying. Go ahead.
I was just going to say Star Wars Black, I can't see legs on that line. I haven't from the beginning. The reason that the Star Wars action figures were designed the scale they were was because the vehicles were so important to the story. And it's very unlikely we're going to get a Millennium Falcon for Star Wars Black.
Oh, no. I think the speeder bike is about as far as we'll go. If it was a raging success, maybe a land speeder. But I think it's the success of things like Marvel Legends and DC Universe Classics. It's really aimed at those collectors who are willing to pay $20 to $25 for one character.
But is the adult collector audience in the U.S. big enough to sustain that? Because, I mean, it's basically at that size and price point, we're giving up kids. We're just saying, you know what? Kids aren't going to be getting these.
Right.
Are there enough adult collectors to keep that strong?
I would say Hasbro's strategy is that kids are not getting Black, but they're keeping the 3¾ line going. And also, the 1 year I covered Toy Fair, I was talking to one of the reps, and I said, what is your ratio of adult collectors to children? And he said, in a non-movie year, it's 50-50. And in a movie year, it's 80-20 kids.
Okay.
So, and we're in a non-movie year. We're basically waiting for the J.J. Abrams film. So I think when the J.J. Abrams film comes, we're going to see a flood of 3¾ stuff and stuff aimed at kids, which we'll probably see at San Diego. But for now, there's not much else going on. The 3¾ line, they've done everybody multiple times. So this is a way to kind of get people interested again. And Hasbro finally found its footing with Marvel Legends. So I think they're just extending that.
I've heard really good things about the Rebels line, but I haven't checked those out yet. I know the minute I see the troop transport, then I'm going to be all in on Rebels once I have that out of the box.
Yeah, we haven't seen too much of Rebels. I got kind of burned out by Clone Wars by the end, and I can't. And my son's not really into it, and he's at the age where, if he's not into it, I'm not watching it.
Okay.
I've heard nothing but good things, and I've seen some of the Rebels lines, but it seems like lately Hasbro's really going back to those 5 points of articulation.
I think that's a good idea though, because it's so playable and the toys are so much more durable. I mean, if they're for kids, I think that's perfect.
And it saves costs, because at the factory, you're not making 20 pieces to assemble a figure. You're making 5.
Yeah, you're not doing crazy insert molding or anything like that. And I've seen kids playing with highly articulated action figures that just get tired with it because I can't stand this guy up. I haven't got every single thing in a line.
Yeah, standing up is a major issue. But when I was a kid, the old Star Wars toys stood so straight, their legs were so close together that they didn't stand up. And I would just lay them down on the floor, and whoever was talking got to stand. It was like they had the conch.
I'm just going to load mine in the mini rigs and have some fun that way.
Everyone is constantly driving.
Absolutely.
So when Star Wars, we're saying Star Wars comes back in 95. In 97, it really explodes because of the special editions. And then
don't forget 96, we had that crazy Shadows of the Empire experiment.
That was an early multimedia experiment where no one media contained the entire story. It was like you got this perspective from the novel, you got a different perspective from the comic, you got a different perspective from the video game. I still feel like I never really read that story because I didn't play the video game.
Yeah, I never played the video game, and I didn't read all of the comic books.
Yeah, I think the comic books focused more on the new bounty hunter character, and the novel focused more on Luke.
Yeah, and then, they had a soundtrack for it. That's just crazy.
Yeah, they basically created all the merchandise around a movie that didn't exist.
Right.
I don't know how well it did. Did you find out any information about how well that did?
The only thing I've been able to find is, at the time, Star Wars was the biggest brand in boys' toys. So, I'm going to say it did okay. And then plus, in 98, when Kenner launched the Expanded Universe line, there were some quotes from Kenner employees talking about how it was the success of Shadows of the Empire that led to them looking deeper into the Expanded Universe and creating that subline.
Hmm. And again, that was good timing for them because that 98 is 1 year before Phantom Menace.
It's in that lull again between the special editions are in theaters and the Phantom Menace hadn't yet come to make us all sad.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard to remember that in 1999 we were very excited.
I was extremely excited. I saw it opening day. I remember walking out of there thinking I must not be feeling well because I didn't really enjoy the movie. And I just assumed I was coming down with – I had a flu or I was sick in some way. So I went back a week later to watch it when I was feeling better, and it didn't get any better as a film at all.
Yeah, I thought I was dumb. I saw it four times over that summer, and I'm like, there's obviously a Kubrickian thing going on here because I'm just not getting it. And I was like, well, how many times did you see the original Star Wars? At that point, I must have seen it 20 times. So maybe that's why I like the original Star Wars now. I just kept going back.
I remember one of the friends I was with when I went to see it before the movie even started. He said, what did he say exactly? Mind of a child. So he was ready and trying to psych himself up to remember, like, think like a kid. But it didn't help any.
No, it's not great. I mean, my son once said he liked that one the best. And then he also said he liked Batman and Robin the best out of the Batman movies.
I've still never seen that film.
Oh, you probably shouldn't.
I might do it for the 20th anniversary, because that seems like kind of a reward of sorts, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, but I feel like it didn't reach a milestone. it just continues to exist somehow because it has Batman on it, so we can sell it.
You know what? 20 years without people destroying every copy on the planet is a success all on its own.
Yeah, we also still have the Batman serials. Those are terrible and even older.
And if we stop and think about it, this year's the 20th anniversary of Judge Dredd with Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah. Ugh. I really, really loved the Carl Urban version. And Mezco's doing this, a gorgeous new figure of Judge Dredd. So I kind of want to see the Stallone version again.
I watched the Stallone version last year. And what I would like to see is the Carl Urban team be given the Stallone budget.
And Rob Schneider.
No, he can stay in 95. But I thought I loved the Carl Urban version, except for the scenes outside, because that is not Mega City 1. I thought that was they borrowed Detroit from RoboCop or something.
Right, yeah. Once they get in the building.
Yeah, once they're in the building, it's all perfect and excellent for me, but the city was just so wrong, it kept bothering me.
Yeah, I was okay with it because we weren't in it that long, and I don't have a deep enough knowledge of Dredd. Most of my Judge Dredd comes from the Batman crossovers that Alan Grant and Grant Fabry would do. So I always liked the character, but I don't know it well enough to say, well, this should be this or this should be that. But I was surprised how much I liked that version. I don't know how the Stallone one would have worked. You know, and it was at a time when it was right before Batman and Robin. It was like the studios knew there was money to be made, but they didn't know how to make it.
Wasn't Batman Forever also in 95?
Yes. Which at the time I thought was okay. And then after seeing Batman and Robin, I was like, oh no, everything that's wrong in Batman and Robin exists in Batman Forever. Just not quite to the degree.
Right.
Yeah, so like Phantom Menace, hindsight. It kind of hurts. Well, speaking of Phantom Menace, I remember that Kenner Hasbro had produced so much Phantom Menace that it really financially hurt them when the film wasn't received as well, didn't it?
Yeah, they flooded the market. I mean, everybody flooded the market with Star Wars stuff in 99, and it took a few years for society to get over that and start to accept Star Wars again. I think a lot of people forget just what a backlash it was in 2000.
Right.
And because there was all that Phantom Menace product on clearance.
Yeah, yeah. I remember in Toys R Us, it was $1.99, and I went back and filled a lot of holes just because it was $1.99. It was cheaper than a comic to own a Phantom Menace action figure.
Yeah. No, after Phantom Menace and after I saw it that second week for the second time, I kind of stopped buying Star Wars stuff for a while. Actually, what caught my attention and had me buy another Star Wars toy was Attack of the Clones when I saw the female sand person with the baby. Because I had to have that. I mean, how does that even exist? You just can't pass it up.
Right, you could just pretend that's happening in the background of the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because there are sand people. Maybe there were more. But yeah, Attack of the Clones, I remember, was a much smaller line. They went pretty conservative initially with that line.
Yep.
What was the most of that period? I know, you know, once we get to Sith, we have even a bigger line than Clones. And then after 2005, you kind of have this mix where basically Star Wars becomes a 6-movie saga and they just create a lot of product for any movie they want in one line. What were your biggest surprises in the Star Wars line, or what were your grail items?
For all time or for that time period?
Let's say all time. Or let's say vintage and modern, because I feel
so
like it's not
vintage,
fair to judge.
Vintage, for me, it's definitely the mini rigs have always been something that fascinated me.
Mm-hmm. The whole line or one particular one?
The entire line of mini rigs, and then the Power of the Force, the 3 body rigs. Because they're so creative and fun. They're toys. I mean, they're hardcore toys. And I completely agree that they look like they could exist in the Star Wars universe.
Right, yeah, they all feel like that. The one I had, I can't remember the name of it now, and I would hope you do. The only one I ever had was kind of that. It was that small fighter where the wings would lower with the lever in the back.
And oh, the INT-4, the one that looked kind of like an AT-AT head?
Yeah. Yeah, I loved that one.
INT-4 Interceptor.
Yeah. I remember I had that. I lost the gun on the front, but it was a great single guy. And you're right. You could hold it in your hand very easily. That became a big bathtub toy.
Yeah.
That was a good one for that. Yeah, there was something fun and creative in the same way that the troop transport was really fun. You know, Kenner knew that line so well that when they took a step outside, they still kind of landed it.
Yeah. And I remember my first introduction to the troop transport was actually in the Star Wars comics.
Oh, did it appear in the comics?
Oh, yeah. I actually, that's one of the bits in my Each Sold Separately book, is talking about the Star Wars comics, because one of the things I started thinking about as I worked on that book, did the Star Wars comics help sell the toys, or did the toys help sell the comics?
In my opinion, the movie sold everything, because that the movie was in theaters basically until Empire ran. But you're right. Now that I think about it, I got the Marvel Omnibus, and it is in there. It's like Carmen Infantino draws it, and you have the guys on the side in those slots.
Yeah, and Carmen Infantino is my absolute favorite Star Wars artist of all time.
Yeah, it's interesting. He has such an interesting style because he's a little looser than he was in, like, say, the Silver Age Flash or Dead Man. But he's having fun with it. I love that era. We were talking about this on the show a couple weeks ago. I love that era of Marvel Comics because before Empire comes out, no one really knows what the Star Wars universe is.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of throwing things at the wall. And reading them now, in the modern era, there's very little that contradicts anything in all six films. But there's stuff that's so weird that it's like, well, you'll never see a Star Wars story like this ever again.
Well, the issue right before Empire Strikes Back, the one where they go through the black hole or wormhole or something into another galaxy.
Right, and it's Michael Golden art. It's beautiful artwork.
Oh, it's gorgeous artwork. I remember, I was living in Turkey at that time, and the comics, it was sporadic. I would get, like, an issue, and then I wouldn't see another one until three issues later, and it was just nearly impossible to find them. But that one is one I remember very well as a kid. And there's, I think it's a three-panel sequence with Luke and Leia, and they're landed in that weird organic hangar.
Right.
And the poses are just astounding. I mean, they're so, for me at a time as a kid, I thought they were like almost photo quality. And now I look back and it's just really good comic art.
Yeah, they're really stylized, but they're great.
Yeah. And that's like another comic I remember from that same time frame was the annual, with that scene with Luke and Leia in the suits with the wings.
Right, and that's Chris Claremont. Like, during his X-Men run, wrote that.
And it's good. It's a really fun story, and it looks great.
Yeah, I was surprised reading that Michael Golden issue how hard a stop it was. Because as I'm reading the Omnibus, I don't remember any of these stories now. It's been so long. And I'm like, well, the next issue is Empire. I want to see how they tee it up. Do they, you know, do they start to set up a rebel base on Hoth? Does Darth Vader figure out that Skywalker is the key to everything? You know, do they go to Ord Mantell and run into a bounty hunter that gets hand to change his mind? And it's just that great, weird Michael Golden story. And then they're just like, you know what? Next issue is the movie.
And didn't they do that twice? Didn't they have an issue that said, next, The Empire Strikes Back, but it wasn't actually the next one?
Yeah, I think that Michael Golden issue was a fill-in.
Yeah, it was supposed to be The Empire Strikes Back, but then at the end of that one, it's next.
Yeah, I don't know why that was, because I know The Empire Strikes Back made its release date. Maybe it was Al Williamson, because he spent a long time on those issues. Maybe he hadn't finished the sixth one yet, and they wanted to have them all in the can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. It's interesting. That his Empire Strikes Back, though, was gorgeous. That was the
Everything Al Williamson is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I've been slowly collecting the old creepy and eerie books, and seeing his art in those is a real treat. You know that cruise missile trooper? It is so wacky and stupid, I just kind of love it.
What is that? That a 90s figure?
97, 98, the Cruise Missile Trooper came out. I'm not sure. It's right around there. That's the one where I felt ripped off. That Stormtrooper did not come out of the vehicle. And he's only like a waist up.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was right. That was also around the time where they did the FXX wing, where Luke and R2-D2 didn't come out. And then they said, well, there's no way we could take them out the way we designed this. And then a year later, they re-released the
the X-Wing that you could take them out. I think I might still have my... Yeah, the cruise missile trooper I never got because it was an expanded universe design and he couldn't come out.
But it wasn't part of the expanded universe line, which I think is interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, if it's 97, it wasn't. Because I remember it was around the time that they put out the Dewback and the Tauntaun, and they were starting to play with different SKUs and different price points. And it came out, I think, didn't it come out in a line with the A-Wing?
I think it did.
Yeah, because I think the A-Wing was about the same size. Yeah, there was.
But it's such a cool-looking, weird design. And if that stupid pilot would come out of it, it would have been a modern mini-rig.
Yeah, that's also when they made the Skyhopper in the scale of the figures.
Yes.
Which they ended up putting in the special editions. And that was just the model that Mark Hamill is playing with in the original Star Wars. Even 2 years into that line, they went crazy.
Yeah, they were doing insane stuff that we had never seen before.
Yeah, my favorite of all time is the updated Millennium Falcon.
The one from 2008, 2009?
Yes, that one.
Oh, that thing's incredible. And have you seen what it sells for these days?
Yeah, it went up $100. It was that was the 1 year I went to San Diego, and I talked to the designer of the Millennium Falcon. It was the same designer who had done the original Millennium Falcon toy.
He is still working at Hasbro.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, and this was, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said he loved it because he got to correct every mistake he made with the first one. but it was $150 then, and I was like, I wasn't a hardcore Star Wars collector at that point. I really had to think about it, and then I got it, and then it's about 6 months ago I saw it in Toys R Us for $250.
Oh, that's actually a good price compared to some of the prices I've seen online for it over the last 6 months.
Really? Of the latest edition, or is it just that first edition has gone up?
Maybe it's just that first edition has gone up, not the one in the vintage style box.
Oh, okay. Well, how much does that one go for, the original?
I saw somebody listing one of those for $500.
Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's crazy. Well, the thing I love most about it is that you could actually put four people in the cockpit.
Yeah.
That drove me crazy as a kid.
And it came with that little mini rig that plugs into the front.
Right, and they were telling me that was a way they could get kids to play with it because they knew a child couldn't pick it up and fly it around the room.
Well, that was also a design they had tried, they'd played with back in the mid-80s.
Right, they were going to have a mini rig that actually fit between the two vanes of the Millennium Falcon.
Right, it was part of that entire line that Kenner created and pitched to Lucasfilm, and they said, no, you're done now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well,
Lucasfilm canceled that line.
Lucasfilm canceled it. Kenner wanted to keep going.
Yeah, and that was right around the time that they did like the mini playsets with the diecast figures. There were some really gorgeous playsets, like the Hoth playsets that fit together like puzzle pieces.
Oh, the micro collection.
Yeah,
those were in '82, and it failed horribly.
Yeah, it was a shame because they were gorgeous. The carbon freeze chamber is stunning.
Yeah, I really like that entire line, and every now and then I'm tempted to try and collect it, but then I start seriously looking at what it would take to collect it, and I just run screaming, because like that Millennium Falcon was a Sears or somebody exclusive, and it's scary pricey.
It's amazing the fact that they've reissued these same ships and characters over and over and over again, but the vintage prices keep going up. I had no idea about the 2008 Millennium Falcon being that expensive.
Yeah, I just took a look. So the one I'm looking at now is on Amazon, so I'd have to check eBay auctions that have finished to see what people really pay for it. But people are starting to ask for $500 and up for that thing.
That's crazy. Now, is Transformers still as strong as Star Wars to you these days?
Probably more so these days than Star Wars.
Really? Why is that?
I think it's a combination of just the fun of transforming the toys, mm-hmm. along with I had been working on those third-party Transformers books, so I just started picking up lots and lots of toys as both research and for photography and things like that.
Right, and now, and with Transformers, you have like Star Wars, you have it split into separate licenses because you can collect just the movie characters or the original G1s or the more kid-friendly animated ones.
Yeah, I don't touch the Michael Bay movies.
Oh, really? See, that's what I've always wondered about hardcore Transformers fans, because I saw the first one and I hated it, and I just never came back.
I have not seen any after the first one.
Oh, that's refreshing to hear.
I see no reason to watch those terrible, terrible films.
Now, I was so proud of my son. He loves the new Nickelodeon Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
It's a well-made show. It's got great voice casts. It's got a nice balance of humor and action. And I was never a huge Ninja Turtle fan, so I didn't have too much invested in it. But he loved it. And when the Michael Bay trailer came out, he turned to me, he was like, "That looks awful, and I don't want to see it." The whole time the trailer came out, I was dreading, going like, I'm going to have to go to this movie and pay for this movie. It's funny because up until 20 years ago, having one license split into several versions was unheard of. Bruce Timm talks about how hard he had to fight for the designs on Batman the Animated Series because Warner Brothers kept saying it doesn't look like the movie.
Right.
And then they figured out, oh, wait, if it doesn't look like the movie, we can sell two lines. And now even at his age, he's like, I like this Ninja Turtle, I don't like that Ninja Turtle.
Well, it sounds like he has good taste then.
He does. Up until he was 7, there were Batman films he could see and Batman films he could not see, and he was okay with it.
Okay. That's nice. Yeah, Ninja Turtles is something I never really got deep into, but I've definitely enjoyed the occasional comic book, and I mean, some of that new Playmates line is really well done.
Yeah, well, as you said, that's your lull in collecting, which was mine as well. Since we're the same age, that's high school. But it's also toys had gotten into kind of a weird place where Ninja Turtles was very big. Everything got more cartoony. Like the G.I. Joes got more primary colors and goofier. Everything became about slime. There were Beetlejuice lines. There were Swamp Thing lines. Garbage Pail Kids was enormous. You know, there was this kind of goofy grossness. Real Ghostbusters was a big line for Kenner.
Right.
And I think the toy industry really started focusing on like 8-year-olds by the time we got into high school. So there wasn't much for us to do. And for me, I came back once Toy Biz got the Tim Burton Batman line.
Okay.
Which led into their Marvel line. But for you, as you said, for you, it's really when Star Wars comes back.
That's the big one for me, yeah.
What's the hole in your collection? Is there anything from either Star Wars or Transformers that you can't believe they haven't made yet? Because they're very comprehensive lines.
So there's things that I would like them to make, but I can totally understand why they haven't made it. For example, well, one of the things I was surprised they made was Straxus from the old Transformers, the Marvel comics, I think issues 17 and 18, was the Decepticon leader left in charge of Cybertron after Megatron left.
Oh, right.
And Hasbro actually made it as a toy. They changed the name for, like, trademark reasons, blah, 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 whatever. But they made that character as a toy, and I couldn't believe it. So that was one that really caught my attention.
What did he transform into?
In the cartoon, in the comic book, he transformed into a big gun.
Mm-hmm. And the toy did that as well? In the same?
No, the toy definitely did not do that. It's a little too modern for Hasbro to make guns. The toy transformed into kind of this half-track.
Okay.
Tank thing. Kind of like how Megatron hasn't transformed into a gun because, well, kids get themselves shot. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just an odd thing about the G1. I collected it. I was into Transformers up until the animated movie. And then when they killed everyone I liked, I just kind of emotionally checked out. I was like, well, there's nobody to invest in now. Because I don't care about Don Johnson. I also had a problem with when they went with futuristic designs. Because I love the fact that that they look like normal 1980s cars and planes and boats. And once they started turning into like space cars, it seemed like kind of a cheat to me. But there were, you know, the Decepticons kind of had this whole subline where they turned into real objects that were scaled to real objects.
Right.
You know, cameras and boomboxes and cassette tapes and guns. I don't know if that's... I've been out of Transformers so long that I don't know if that still happens.
Not like it once did.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, part of it is you can't really sell a kid
a gun.
Cassette tape because...
Yeah, it's true.
They're like, what the hell is this? Yeah. But one of the characters I wish Hasbro would tackle, and there's no way they're ever going to tackle, is from that same set of comics that Straxus came out of, which was this character called Scrounge. And it's a real throwaway character design just to help move the plot along. And he transforms into a wheel.
Like a not a wheel connected to an axle?
It is a wheel.
Just he becomes round.
He basically becomes the crazy cycle thing that Grievous drives.
Oh, okay.
But without any of the cool factor at all.
Or without a guy driving him.
Right. And for some reason, when I was a kid, I thought that would make a really cool toy. And still to this day, it has not existed.
I remember that about G.I. Joe when they finally made Quinn, when they were doing the three packs, because he was a huge character when Larry Hama was writing it, and he actually killed him off, but he had a whole arc.
Yeah.
And then they didn't make him until like 2004. And there was a real excitement about that. You know, I still get really excited when I see any character that's never been made before. You know, Mezco put out that new Dark Knight Returns figure. And then at Toy Fair, they announced they're going to do the Mutant Leader. And my first reaction was, no one has ever done the Mutant Leader from Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, when I never got a chance to really stop at the Mezco booth, but I walked by a couple times, and every time I would stop, and I'd look at both the Mutant Leader and then the Lawmaster for Dread.
Oh, yeah, that does look huge.
Oh, it's giant in person, and I really hope they make it. I would buy that.
Well, judging from the reaction to Batman, mine's actually shipping right now, so I don't have them in hand.
I don't have mine either.
Yeah, I ordered both. I went online to order the blue and the gray with the yellow oval, because they've already made the black and the gray so many times, and then at the last minute I was like, you know what, I'm getting both.
See, I ordered the blue and the gray, because that's the classic Batman and the one I wanted, and I said, okay, I'm good. And then I ordered the other one because I'm like, well, you know, I'm here anyway. And then I went and ordered the Mezco one because, well, they look so cool.
Yeah, and now you needed to complete the set.
Yeah, I mean, two-thirds of the way there. I may as well grab the last one.
Yeah, I'm a huge – Batman is probably the focus of my collection now, and I kind of have every version. So I'm kind of mad that I missed the Mezco version because he sold out.
Oh, wow. I got lucky then.
You did get lucky. In fact, Big Bad Toy Store sold out of the blue and gray before. And my co-host owns the comic store nearest me, and he wasn't getting any in. So I was scrambling, and then finally I found out a Mock Time had them.
Wow.
And so I just grabbed them both. But yeah, I'm hearing nothing but great things. And I know at Toy Fair in their catalog, they basically listed every license that they have underneath this new line, which is the 112.
Right.
So, like, down to Star Trek and Breaking Bad. So it'll be interesting if this really takes off. I mean, they're...
And didn't they announce Space Ghost for that line?
Oh, I don't know.
Am I thinking of somebody else?
I don't know. I still have the Art Asylum Space Ghost from the time when I worked there for a while as their copywriter. And we have that. And that's still a really nice figure. I mean, he could use more articulation, but, you know, for late 90s.
Yeah.
It's really well done. And at that point, it was the Cartoon Network, so he comes with the desk. But, so is there anything from Star Wars that you wish they would have made?
Yeah, but it's probably going to get me strung up.
Which is? The holiday special?
No, we need a bunny.
Oh, yeah.
Jackson.
From Marvel.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I meant when I was like, Marvel just did crazy stories.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. Roy
and I've read somewhere that George Lucas just hates a lot of that stuff. But
yeah, well, that That story basically got Roy Thomas fired slash quit. Because he talks about it in the foreword of the book. He was like, they didn't know what they wanted. And I was like, let's do the Magnificent Seven and here's a bunny. And then he said they hated it so much that he walked off and Archie Goodwin did the bulk of the run. But yeah, it's a crazy story. But not only is the bunny crazy, every other character in that story is equally crazy, just not visually.
The I'm almost Luke Skywalker farm boy character with the droid with the tank treads.
Yep, there's the Don Quixote Jedi.
Yes.
There's a stripper who doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, and she wears fur or something?
She does. She wears like a red bikini and like a boa.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I am kind of surprised they didn't try to do that. I'm sure it would sell. Like a San Diego exclusive would sell.
Oh, I would buy the bunny immediately, Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was literally Bugs Bunny painted green.
And Lucas doesn't get a say anymore.
Right. That's the interesting thing. That's why I always talk about how much I want to see a fifth Indiana Jones with just Spielberg and Harrison Ford. And, of course, it looked like it was going to happen, and then now it looks like it'll be Chris Pratt. But I wanted to see one more without Lucas's influence. And he said in an interview, he sent them all of his notes for Star Wars 7, and they're not using a single one.
Yep.
How do you feel about that? Are you hopeful about the seventh?
I think I am very hopeful about it because I feel like the people involved in it came from my generation. And I think they're going to have a little more respect for the property and the history of it than Lucas did.
Yeah, I think so. In the prequels, and one of the major problems I have, it's almost the same problem I have with Peter Jackson, The Hobbit, is you can tell the director's just not that into it. Like, they did the movies they wanted to do, and they're trying to respect it, but they're just not inspired anymore.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Hobbit movies because Peter Jackson took my favorite book out of all of those and made it into the longest nightmare known to man.
The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings?
The Hobbit.
Okay.
No, so The Lord of the Rings, I have the exact same problem with the films that I have with the books. They're too long.
Yeah, but at least in The Lord of the Rings, when they're long, they're doing things that were in the book. The Hobbit is just, you know, there's one movie in there and a lot of stuff on top of it.
Yeah, and the reason I didn't go see The Hobbit, I was excited at first about The Hobbit because it is my favorite of those four books.
Mine too.
But then I found out, oh, he took the shortest book and made three movies that are as long as the entire Lord of the Rings. No, I'm out. And I think it was just two to start and then three.
Yeah, it was. It was two to start, and then as he was editing it, he didn't want to cut anything out, so they made it three. And there's a great movie in there, but man, I remember at one point, I think I was walking out of the third movie and went, Rankin Bass took an hour. And they had a lot of songs.
I'm not touching it. I don't see the reason. Life's too short. I've got things to do.
Yeah, I will say, Phil, the moments that are good in it are great, but you have to wait for them. The only way I would recommend...
No, I don't. But if somebody wants to edit those three into one that is only the good stuff, I would watch that.
Somebody did. In fact, I posted it on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. Somebody made a fan edit. I downloaded it, but I haven't watched it. It's 4 hours.
Ugh.
But they said they cut out everything that wasn't Tolkien.
I think I'll wait until somebody gets that down to 2 hours.
Rankin Bass did it in one. You can watch that again. You know, the goblins sing. It's fun.
I don't have time like I used to for that sort of thing. I've got too much work to do.
Yeah, I would say the best way to watch that is if you have to clean your house. You just put it on and start cleaning.
I can also put music on.
That's true. You could also do it in silence. I mean, yeah.
How many times can I watch the Star Wars Holiday Special instead of a 3 Hobbit movie.
Wow, that is damning. Yeah. Yeah, I do have a soft spot for when good franchises go bad. I own Batman and Robin. I want to watch the Stallone Judge Dredd now that you brought it up.
Oh, you totally should. I watched it again. I think it was last year I watched it. And, you know, a lot of people badmouth it, but it's got this goofy charm to it.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I haven't seen it since probably it was on HBO in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
But so we haven't even talked about the books much. So your newest book, you have a Kickstarter.
Yes, I've got a Kickstarter up right now for a book called Universe Expanded, and it is planned as a 96-page hardcover that focuses just on those 12 Kenner Expanded Universe toys from 1998.
And as you said, you take your own photography.
Yes.
Now, is it more of a gallery, beautiful photography picture book, or is it also... or is it really a comprehensive history of the line with pictures? Where would you say you lead more towards?
I would say it's 60-65% pictures, and the rest is editorializing on the line itself, and not just the line, but then where did these characters come from? Other appearances of these characters in different parts of the Star Wars Expanded Universe. For example, the Dark Trooper and how it was used in an issue of the Star Wars Tales comics in 2000.
I remember that in the video game. And it would just like blast missiles in your face.
Oh, I love that game.
Yeah, that was a great game. It was Doom with Star Wars. And I played on the PC nonstop. And I'm not even that big a gamer.
Yeah, I played that one on the Mac like crazy. I think it was 96, probably that entire summer.
Yeah, just a couple of years before the figure. That line was also really predated a lot of the video game figure lines. You know, it's before, I think, Toy Biz is Resident Evil, and then McFarlane got into a huge amount of video game figures. But the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Is it right around that time, though? Because I think Resaurus was doing Quake figures or something, 98, 99.
Yeah, I think it's like maybe a little later, but I think since Kenner already had the Star Wars line, they were able to get them out faster.
Yeah, it's right in that time frame, though, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm doing is I've been digging out a lot of old magazines from that time to look at what was the response from magazines like Lee's Action Figure News or Toy Fair.
And what was the response?
It was phenomenal. I mean, those Expanded Universe toys were in the Toy Fair top 10 multiple times because people wanted those. Star Wars was the big thing. And these were more completely new Star Wars action figures that we had never had. As a kid, you never had the Luke evil, like, dark Jedi costume, because it just didn't exist when we were kids.
Right. Now, so what ended the line? Was it effectively Phantom Menace? If it was that successful, was it just the movie's out and let's get out of its way?
I found an article where some of the team at Kenner talks about if the Expanded Universe line is successful, they will come back and do that again.
But then Phantom Menace tanked.
Yeah, I really think a lot of the problem why we didn't see them touch on the Expanded Universe again until I think the Clone Wars cartoon, the 2003, was the next time they really started to touch on that.
The Tardis.
I think it was because of the failure of the Phantom Menace line. I think they were scared. They didn't want to put things out that weren't really recognizable to as large an audience as possible, because it was, I think it was 2000 where they started that Power of the Jedi line and started doing the mix of episode one characters, but a lot of classic trilogy.
Right. And you also see around 2000 is also when they start to talk about bring G.I. Joe back, because there were no licensing fees. So there's a bigger profit margin for them, and maybe they needed to help the bottom line after Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating book. And I know the Kickstarter's still running. How can you find the Kickstarter?
If you go to Kickstarter, you can search for Universe Expanded, or you can go to my toy site, which is battlegrip.com. And there's links there, and I post some level of stupid every day to that site.
Right, and you're also on Twitter, I know that.
Yes, Philip J. Reed is my Twitter account. And then the office is sjgames.com, and I'm easily findable there.
You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. Like us on Facebook. A lot of things going on Facebook. And Steven's shop is 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We will talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take-